That's right. Steve Dale's Other World. WGN. Fascinating, fascinating perspective. Checking out this book, How to Be Human, An Autistic Man's Guide to Life by Jory Fleming, with Lyric Winnick, who helped to write the book and interview Jory. Jory, I am actually, you can't see me now because, you know, we're on the radio, but I'm actually wearing a baseball cap that I got when I went to Oxford. So I go into Oxford just to get a baseball cap, and then they throw me out. You went to school at Oxford. So let me go back in time a little bit. You weren't expected, maybe, to finish high school once being diagnosed as autistic. Certainly not likely to go to college. And here you become a Rhodes Scholar. How did that happen? A lot of work, I suppose.
In part, but really what stands out to me is more so the investment with others. You know, when I think of education, I think mostly of teachers. And, of course, students play an important role in their own education. But I know in my case and in many others, the role of everyone that supports you along that educational journey is just as, if not more, important.
Well, 312-981-7200. That's our phone number. You can call, you can text, because you might have a question about this book, How to Be Human, An Autistic Man's Guide to Life, and the perspective of someone who is, you tell me, Jory, how to say it, autistic, or do I say you're on the spectrum? Do I say, what is, first of all, the proper terminology for me to use to describe you?
Oh, you know, that's a great question, and maybe not one that I'm well-suited to answer, in part because language is one of the core difficulties that autism poses for me. As in the title of the book, I tend to use autistic to refer to myself.
Indeed. And you seem to have no problem in the book using language whatsoever, but you do spend a lot of time in this book writing about your perspective, what it's like to think like you think. So according to you, people like me, which you call what's the proper term for it?
Neurotypical.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, yeah.
I think in a linear fashion where you think in images and you think very differently than your neurotypical person does. Can you try to put into words what that difference is?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that's been really interesting for me to see is over the past, I don't know what time period exactly, but, you know, it's fairly recent, where I think there's a growing awareness of autism, of when it comes to neurodivergence, it expands further to include other conditions like ADHD. But I think that in terms of that broader term, it's really trying to get at the fact that in the same way that people are different from one another along many different axes, the brain can be one. And so I think it's one of those things where we don't often pause to say, oh, how do I think compared to how other people think? But, you know, one of the things about being autistic is that I really do get the sense that my brain maybe operates in a different way or has some different machinery that's kind of up there that I have to work with. And one of the most prominent examples that I find for myself is the use of images and visual images in my own mind as a way to process things. There's definitely not a whole lot of words popping around up there. It's something that is not really my native language, if that makes any sense.
Do you actually think in images?
Yeah, so there's very few, if any, words at all in my mind. It is almost like if you imagine yourself standing in a space and all around you are images, sounds, movements, actions, and the connections between those are what make my thinking possible for me.
Now, when you're with, say, a group of friends and you're having a conversation, is it difficult at times to track exactly what they mean at times? And reverse, do sometimes they have a difficult time attending to what you mean?
Yeah. So, you know, in conversations, maybe not exclusively, but oftentimes words are the medium that people will use to communicate ideas and thoughts to one another. You know, they're in the brain, but to kind of get them out in a way that someone else, another brain, understands, you know, a lot of cases you have to use words as kind of the default, if you will. And yeah, that's not my default. And so it runs into many challenges sometimes, where I have to translate what's in my mind into that conception of words and putting letters into words, into words, into sentences, and sentences into what is hopefully intelligible speech. And, you know, most of the time it comes out all right. But when there's more than one person involved, when there's multiple people involved, it can be hard to track all of their words at once and translate that. And then sometimes when I go and do my translation and I can tell that it wasn't interpreted correctly, or I said the wrong thing, you know, or just sort of puzzlement, I sort of know, oh, well, I probably didn't do that right, and I need to give it another try.
Mm-hmm. Not only were you diagnosed at a young age as being autistic, but also have a mild case of cerebral palsy and mitochondrial disease. I think people know what CPE mm-hmm. is, or at least have some notion of it. What is mitochondrial disease?
Yeah, it's a genetic condition, and it affects my ability to break down energy, specifically fats. And so it affects my diet and also my energy levels. So I wear medical equipment that gives me nutrition as well as medication delivered through the stomach over the course of the day and night. And that's how that condition affects me. And as you were mentioning, cerebral palsy is a physical disability, I suppose you could say, and it affects, I wear leg braces for it to help with stability and when I'm sort of moving around, and it also affects my fine motor skills for sure.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is more difficult to live with? Is it which of those, mitochondrial disease, cerebral palsy, or being autistic?
You know, I think it's hard for me to parse because, you know, I only have my own lived experience to draw from, you know. It's not like I can give it a trial run with different combinations and see what happens. I think they are perceived differently. I tend to notice that, you know, whether it's tubes hanging off of me or leg braces, those tend to be noticed rather quickly. And sometimes, it's changed a bit with the book, I guess. But, you know, in my past experiences, it hasn't always been immediately noticeable, I guess, to others that I have autism, you know. So that's been an interesting experience to live with. But it's really hard for me to say, I guess, which of them impacts me more or less. And I think it can change throughout the day, any given day as well.
Hmm. 244 on WGN. In the book, How to Be Human, An Autistic Man's Guide to Life, Jory Fleming writes, or at least hints, that I'm not so sure I'd want a cure for autism because I think there's some advantages to be me. We'll talk more about that when we come back on WGN. I've got a great lawyer joke coming up for Karen Conti who will not appreciate that, but that's okay. Steve Dale's Other World on WGN, Karen Conti, legally speaking, after 3 o'clock on WGN. And on the phone now, How to Be Human, An Autistic Man's Guide to Life. The author, Jory Fleming, is on the phone. And Jory, a text question from one of our listeners. How have you achieved so much, and do you even consider yourself disabled?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the answer is yes. You know, and I think the difference cuts both ways. In the book, I write about memory. But, you know, unfortunately, I think now I'm going to remember Lakeside Bank, which I was listening to. It's probably not going to leave my head for the rest of the day.
Oh, good.
So, you know, I guess that's great for Lakeside Bank.
Yes.
But, you know, I think my memory can sometimes really aid me. But there are times like now where, like, for some reason, it's just going to worm its way in there. And, you know, living with multiple disabilities, I think, also really is, I guess, a major factor with my own experience with disabilities as well. You know, it's not just my mind difference and communication challenges, but it's also physical challenges. It's also medical challenges, and they all kind of affect me in different ways. You know, not being having great difficulties in communicating with someone is challenging on the human level. Being tired out and having difficulties walking can be challenging on a physical level. And then having a medical condition and having to deal with insurance companies is its own sort of weekly, if not daily, challenge.
Okay, that I certainly understand.
It can be a lot, you know?
Yeah.
That can be a lot, yeah. Oh, I definitely would consider myself disabled, yeah.
So, Rhodes Scholar. I mean, that's pretty incredible. And you studied at Oxford. I mean, crazy question. Did you ever think you would achieve so much? And what did you also, by the way, major in the UK at Oxford?
Yeah. And I think, and what the person who asked that question is driving towards, I think that my own example, you know, I think disabled people are a part of life, a part of our communities, and can achieve great things and give back to others. And I had a wonderful opportunity to go to Oxford, and while I was there, I studied climate change in their geography department. I studied geography and marine science in undergraduate, and I would consider myself a geographer. So thinking about spaces and location and that kind of that where question, you know, it's one of the five W's that can really offer a lot of insight.
Well, you wrote in the book, in a couple of different places, that, and I'm paraphrasing, so forgive me for that, that I'm not so sure that a cure, now I'm saying this because, gee whiz, there's such a spectrum is the right word, in people that are diagnosed as autistic and what they are able to, for lack of a better word, achieve in life. But for you, you say, well, I don't know if I'd be the same person if I wasn't autistic, so I don't know the cure would be right. Again, I'm paraphrasing, so I'll let you say it the way you want to say it.
Yeah, you know, I think that there can be times where, as a disabled person, I notice that others may not always see me the same way they see themselves, in the sense of I consider myself fully human, and I try my best to not see other humans as inferior in any way, no matter how they might be different from me. And I know different people may think otherwise for different reasons, but I think it's really important to see the value in other people. I've had situations in my own life where the difference in my way of thinking has been a benefit to a group, for example. And how I tend to think about.
Give me an example of that, Jory.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I've been working on with work is thinking about how to communicate climate change to people. And I think where I live in South Carolina, the impacts from pollution related to global warming and all that entails are different from maybe the ones you might experience in Chicago. And how you communicate that to people can go a long way to influencing whether they then take it in and consider how it might affect them in their own day-to-day lives. And, you know, that you don't, I guess it doesn't require a disability to think like that. But when you have two people with different sets of experiences and backgrounds come to that conversation, or three or four, it tends to be more dynamic. And the group that I'm working on that's developing a web page that can give people an overview of what climate will look like in the Southeast. And it'll be on a government website at some point. But, you know, the fact that I've been able to work alongside other people, you know, I suggest things that they hadn't thought of and they suggest things that I hadn't thought of. And I think that's the product of the differences that we carry as different human beings into that conversation.
And explain what that work is specifically that you are doing now.
Yeah, I'm a research associate at the University of South Carolina working on climate change. And what I was just talking about is part of NOAA, which is one of the federal agencies. And they have something called a climate resilience toolkit. And you can look up and they're building impacts for different regions. So you can go, and I think the one for Chicago is actually active, where you can go and look and say, oh, like what are the kind of the key impacts that I might want to consider, and links to resources and things like that. It's one example of the work that I do which is sort of connecting what can often be maybe science is not always communicated well, and so to be that bridge between the science and the public, with government officials, with community groups that would like to have access to the information, whether it's in text that's easier to understand, in numbers that are turned into maps and graphs that are easier to share, that kind of thing.
You write in the book also that you're curious about people who intentionally lie. You're then very curious about some lawyers, I know, or maybe public officials. I'm not so sure. I didn't say that. Don't quote me on that. But you don't lie well. Is that true for all people who are autistic? Do you know?
No, I don't. And, you know, it's in part because I can only really speak to my own experience and what I've observed from other autistic people I've personally met. I know in my case, I'm not great at it, so I don't even bother. it's not going to work. So.
And you wrote also in the book that the clock is ticking. You only have 40 or 50 years, and you're under such pressure to make a difference. Is that your goal, to make a difference in the world?
Yeah, and you know, how I've thought about it and what Oxford helped me to realize is that, you know, I think it's a question that many young people often think about, you know, what do I want to do and how do I want to influence others? And what I've come to learn is that, you know, it's hard to see sometimes the difference that I'm making day to day, but I'm growing more and more comfortable with realizing that, you know, it can be hard to see for one thing, but then, you know, whether my name sort of is on, I guess, something permanent or not, I can still interact with people that I meet in a positive way. I can share with them about the environment, for example, and many other things, you know. A positive interaction can be one point in a cycle of positivity that each one of us can kind of help generate in our day-to-day lives.
Well, Jory,
speaking with neighbors and friends, with colleagues, etc.
Yeah. Listen, I do believe your book, How to Be Human, An Autistic Man's Guide to Life. Reading it does bring, sort of open the window, if you will, into what maybe at least your brain looks like, if not every person with autism. And it's fascinating. Jory Fleming, so nice to meet you. What an accomplished young man you are, and what an intelligent and well-spoken, it turns out, young man you are. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. And hello to everybody in Chicago.